like I said. Well, shit. I don't want to risk boarding a hostile ship with our depleted star team. We're back to square one, then. Not precisely. Smythe had a very satisfied I-know-something-you-don't look. Don't make me guess. I mock glared at him over my mug while I gulped it. Damn, it was still super hot. In the Maxalk's message traffic, we found an operation they are planning. The Bosphorok have sent transport ships to a planet they call Vua Vendigo. It is an isolated world, served by only one dead-end wormhole. Its primary asset is an agricultural research station. That station has a substantial civilian population, and the Birdbrains want to evacuate all personnel. The Maxalks have learned about the evac plan, and they are using it as an opportunity to show their clients they can't escape punishment. The Kitties intend to intercept and destroy the transport ships, then bombard the research station from orbit. They're going to wipe out an agricultural station? I knew the Maxalks were ruthless, but that surprised me. Why? Because, Skippy explained. The Maxalks suspect that research into plans might be a cover for banned activities, but mostly, the Kitties want to make a statement that no place in Bosphorok territory is safe. Probably they wouldn't have bothered attacking Vua Vendigo, but if they allow their clients to get away with an evacuation, the Maxalks will appear weak. Killing a couple thousand civilian research scientists, support personnel, and their families will send a strong message. Plus, the Maxalks are simply hateful MFers, and they think killing defenseless clients is fun. Well, screw them. Suddenly, I didn't feel like drinking coffee. Guilt tends to spoil my appetite. Listen, Smythe, I do feel bad for those Bosphorok. I started this whole mess. That was true. The reason the Maxalks were shooting at their clients was my fault. The worst part of it was that desperate scheme hadn't worked. All those Bosphorok deaths were for nothing, and we couldn't do anything to stop the slaughter. You aren't proposing we defend that planet, are you? I'm not risking this ship for aliens, even if they are civilians. Besides, the Kitties will just send more ships until they knock us out and turn that planet into a smoking ruin. No, sir, it is impractical to defend that world, and that is not our responsibility. Skippy and I were considering whether we should warn the planet, and perhaps the star carrier that is bringing the transport ships. Let them know the Maxalks are planning to attack. Without thinking about it, I did the Jim Kirk lean. Right elbow on the armrest, chin cradled by my thumb, index finger scratching my chin thoughtfully. We warn the Bosphorok. The Maxalks are certain to learn about it, right? The Kitties will know for sure someone has hacked their communications. That is the point, yes, Smythe agreed. We will provide the Maxalks with evidence their communications have been compromised by warning the people on Vua Vendigo. Then we will show them how they were hacked by planting pixies aboard damaged Bosphorok ships. Huh. I stared at the ceiling. That was not a Jim Kirk signature move, but then Kirk seldom wrestled with self-doubt. I read somewhere that in World War II, the Allies knew the Germans planned to bomb a city in England, but they couldn't send the RAF to defend because that would expose the secret that the German code had been broken. Damn. I shook my head. That was a tough call. The right call, but tough. Now we're doing the opposite. The story about the bombing of Coventry, Smythe said matter-of-factly, is probably a myth. However, it is true that protecting the secret of the Ultra Code being broken required extraordinary measures. And now, I mused, we have an even greater secret and we're giving it away. Somehow that doesn't feel right. The Maxalks would assume that doesn't mean it is wrong, it just feels wrong, you know? I asked. We've spent years out here, going to great lengths to keep our secrets. We have killed to protect our secrets. Now we're giving it away. It goes against my training, but... I took a breath. It is the right thing to do. This voodoo vending place. The name is Vua Vendigo. Skippy was disgusted. Can you not remember even, like, the name matters? Do you have to give a nickname to everything? Well, I'm a soldier, so yeah. Ugh. The next time I sign up with an outfit of dangerous desperados, it will be the Salvation Army. Okay, On one side we have a bird-brain star carrier with its racks stuffed with transport ships. What are the kiddies bringing to the party? For me, that was the crucial question. If the Maxalks had assigned a group of battleships to the raiding party, we needed to look for another opportunity. No way was I risking Valkyrie in another tough fight if I didn't have to. One screw-up was enough. It's not quite so simple, Smythe explained with a pained expression. The Bosphorak are sending 3 star carriers. 2 are bringing 11 transport ships between them. The third carrier's platforms are loaded with 4 battleships. 4 of the most modern heavy combatants in the Bosphorak fleet. I whistled. Holy shit. The Birdbrains are gearing up for a fight against their patrons? It appears so, Smythe nodded. The Maxalks are sending a pair of heavy cruisers without escorts. No escort ships? That was puzzling to me. Yes, Joe, Skippy confirmed. It's a long flight from the closest Maxalks base to Vua Vendigo, far enough that short-range ships like destroyers would need to refuel along the way or be strapped to a star carrier. Our ghost ship attacks have convinced the kiddies that lightly armored escort vessels are worthless, even a burden in combat. 2 heavy cruisers can complete the mission without needing a vulnerable star carrier, plus they are considered safe from us because we have never intentionally attacked a capital ship. We did that once, I corrected him. That was a mistake, Skippy corrected me right back. From intercepted message traffic, we know the Maxalks now suspect that our 13th attack did not intend to target such a heavy force. Regardless, the kiddies believe we will avoid targets that can fight back.
They're right about that, I muttered, unhappy with the thought of taking our one precious battle wagon into another potentially fair fight.
What about the Birdbrain battleships? Does the math change if they're on our side? Skippy took off his oversized Grand Admiral's hat and scratched his dome for effect.
Marginally, he frowned. We shouldn't count on coordinating an attack with the Bosphorak, Joe. They're not just going to follow orders from a ghost ship. Besides, their tactics are not compatible with...
Okay, I was just asking. Bad idea, I admitted.
Crap. We need to hack into a Bosphorak relay station to get the flight plans of those 3 star carriers, then find their actual locations before they get to a... When I called the place Voodoo Vending, that was to piss off Skippy. Now I couldn't remember the real name.
The planet.
No need to do that, sir, Smythe assured me with another self-satisfied smile. The kitties have done all the work for us.
How?
Because, Joe, Skippy took up the explanation, they hacked the messages of their clients, even the codes that the Birdbrains think are secure. The Maxalks know all about the battleships and the flight plans. The 3 carriers are staging from separate bases. They plan to rendezvous after going through the last wormhole at a location about 3 light years from Vua Vendigo. The Maxalks will be waiting for them.
And we will be waiting for them.
Smythe's grin was more predatory than amused. Do we have time to get there well ahead of time? I asked the question that was the first of many concerns on my list.
Wait. I looked at Smythe. You have all this worked out, right? How about if I shut up and you tell me about your plan?
He did. I liked it enough to order our ships to start jumping toward the target.
Chapter 22.
Uh-oh, Joe. I just finished decrypting message traffic from the relay station. We might have... a slight problem.
Slight problem like you locked your keys in your car but a window is open, or like the iceberg was a slight problem for the Titanic?
The second one.
Shit. Someday you are going to surprise me with a slight problem that is actually a slight freaking problem.
Dude, the Merry Band of Pirates don't have slight problems. Don't blame me.
What is it this time?
Well, you have heard the term relative humidity. Like, sometimes you notice the humidity in the air and sometimes you don't.
I was pretty sure he was dumbing that way down for me, but whatever.
Sure. Okay, so, what I mean is sometimes things can be relative, you know? Like, you think you have done a really good, super-duper job of concealing evidence, but then some nitpicky jerk who has literally nothing else to do comes along and...
Crap, what did you do, Skippy?
It's kind of what I didn't do, or what I didn't do well enough, you know?
What? I counted down from 5 to control my temper. Did you not do well enough?
So far,
2 things. First, I should give you some background. There is a Maxalt starship captain named Ilyith who has been assigned to verify the bullshit story we cooked up about the Bosphorok developing advanced technologies and blowing up 2 Kitty warships on their way to Earth. She could have seen the assignment as busy work, done the minimum effort to check the boxes, and move on with her life. But no, she has to take her job seriously because she is so important, and she... Okay, so what did this chick do? Commander Ilyith is not a chick, Joe. My bad, you know what I mean. Go on. She looked deeper into our cover story about changes in the inner structure of the star, in the system where we took over the moon base and stole a Maxalt dropship. That cover story was solid, absolutely solid, except for the nagging little detail that I couldn't send the effect back in time. Of course you couldn't. Why would the... Holy shit, the kiddies have a freaking time machine? No, you knucklehead. Well, they sort of do, I guess. Space combat, Joe. Oh. Now give me bonus points for knowing what he meant. They jumped out to where light from the star was from before you screwed with it? Exactly. He paused. Very good, Joe. Sometimes you are not as dumb as you look. Why didn't you consider this before? Because, duh, there is nothing I could do about it. Plus, I never expected some obsessive-compulsive Sherlock Holmes wannabe would investigate in that level of detail. Actually, I have to admit I am impressed by their AI. It must have created a virtual model of the star, and... Anyway, that sort of thing is nothing more than a hobby for me, but it is impressive that a Maxalt AI did it. What's the damage? They know we're involved? No, nothing like that. All they know is the timing of when the star was screwed with doesn't line up with the story we planted in the confession message. This Ilyith woman reported her findings to their fleet intelligence, and mostly it was dismissed. The intel people figure that whoever wrote the confession didn't have access to all the details and got the timing wrong. By the time they received her data, we had started our ghost ship campaign and their fleet had more important things to worry about.
Okay, that is a relief.
So why is this a problem for us? Because Ilyith is very persistent and very dedicated and very good at her job. Also, Fleet Intelligence is hedging their bets, so they allowed her to continue her mission, even after we launched the ghost ship attacks. Her next stop was where we attacked the 2 ships headed to Earth.
The place where you cleaned up the crime scene? You used the ship's mazes to fry any tiny little pieces of debris that could put back the Dutchman.
Yep, I did fry the evidence. Mostly.
Mostly, what does that mean?
It means I got all the pieces I could detect with the ship's sensors. We were very thorough, just not thorough enough. Ilyith sent out a cloud of nanoparticle sensors to scour a section of the battle space. It was... Waving a hand to stop him from relating nerdy details I wouldn't understand, I asked, "Bottom line this for me, Skippy. What do the kiddies know?"
They found fragments of the Dutchman's hull. The fragments were microscopic, but large enough for a full chemical analysis. Ilyith was able to determine the fragments came from the hull of a Theranin starship.
Oh, shit. Okay, she can't identify the hull fragments to the Dutchman, can she?
No. Well, not exactly. She does not know the fragments belong to a particular Theranin ship. She can't even determine the ship was a star carrier. Plus, since we captured the Dutchman, that ship has flown through a whole lot of radiation and micrometeorites that have altered the hull's original composition.
So, we're good then? She doesn't have any useful info?
Again, not exactly. Remember when we jumped through an Elder wormhole and we broke it?
Of course I do.
Yeah, well, the kitties were very interested in learning what the hell happened there. They scoured that area also, and... Well, we left some pieces of the ship behind there because the Dutchman was damaged by passing through the wormhole. Don't worry, the kitties still can't identify the ship that collapsed that wormhole. But... Ilyith was able to determine the Theranin hull fragments at the battle site are from the same Theranin ship that was involved in the wormhole collapse.
Oh, this is bad news, Skippy. It calls into question our whole story for framing the Bosphorok.
Maybe and maybe not. The Dutchman contains not only Theranin hardware, it also has bits and pieces of multiple ships we took from the junkyard in the Roach Motel. Ilyith's AI is flabbergasted. Their sensor sweep found particles from ships of 11 different species in the battle space. They have no idea what to make of the data.
Oh, so this is neither bad news nor good news?
I wouldn't say that. You know how when the STAR team conducts training outside the ship, they put on mech suits and go through an airlock?
Yeah, I've trained with them more than once.
You also know how when a dropship launches, the docking bay is depressurized before the doors open?
I'm getting a bad feeling about this.
When people go outside in mech suits or dropships launch, the outsides of those things are coated with a fine layer of human DNA. Moving around, or dropships using thrusters, or just the solar wind, knocks DNA particles off and deposits them on the hull.
I have a very bad feeling about this.
You should. Iliath found traces of human DNA at the battle site.
Skippy, when I was learning the principles of space combat, the key was understanding that everything out here is so big. Now you're telling me I also need to worry about stuff so tiny it is microscopic?
Unfortunately, yes.
The kiddies know humans were involved in destroying two of their ships?
No, Joe, they don't. Along with human DNA, they found biological evidence of 8 other species, including Theranin, Kristang, and Bosphorok. Iliath's report listed the finding of human DNA as a curiosity. She does not suspect humans were involved. She would probably dismiss that notion as ridiculous.
This is telling me that our margin of error has suddenly gotten very small.
I agree.
Valkyrie's hull is also coated with human DNA?
Yes, it is unavoidable.
So the Maxalks might find DNA at the sites where the ghost ship attacked?
Only at the sites of battles where Valkyrie's hull was struck by enemy fire. In most of our battles, we were not touched by enemy weapons at all.
Do you have any good news for me?
Yes. Iliath absolutely confirmed that 2 Maxalt ships were destroyed at the battle site, and she was able to identify the debris as the 2 ships that were going to Earth. That part of the evidence matches the story we planted to frame the birds. She also found the decoy debris we planted, and she does not know we left that debris to frame the Bosphorok. So, the evidence is inconclusive. She is questioning how much of the story we planted is true, because clearly some evidence she found contradicts parts of the story.
Should I be worried about this?
That depends, Joe.
Are you worried about this?
Yes. This Iliath is very persistent. She will not stop until she has answers.
While at the time I thought the ghost ship attacks were a foolish risk you took because you couldn't think of anything better to do, I now believe those attacks are our best protection. With their fleet tied up responding to us, they don't have resources for looking deeper into evidence at the battle sites. In Iliath's report, she speculated that the ghost ship is actually controlled by the Rindaloo, although she has no evidence to support her suspicion. Attacks by the ghost ship are leading the kitties away from the truth.
That can only be good for us, right?
Yeah, unless we get suckered into another trap. After our 13th battle, the kitties left 2 destroyers behind to search the area. Did they pick up any human DNA?
No, those destroyers were looking for where our ship jumped to, not investigating a crime scene. The nanoscale sensor gear used by Iliath is very specialized equipment. Most warships don't carry that kind of gear. For now, we don't need to worry. The site of our 13th battle has been declared a no-fly zone by the Maxalts. Their ships have been ordered to avoid the area.
Okay. We dodged a bullet. Again, you can't count on dodging many bullets in the future.
Right.
Whatever we do, we need to be super, super-duper careful. Is there anything we can do, different procedures we can apply to avoid leaving evidence behind?
Yes, I recommend we take Valkyrie in close to a star with the shields deactivated before we take the ship into combat again. A few seconds of close exposure to intense solar radiation will incinerate most of the DNA off the hull. Before dropships launch, we can flood the docking bay with ultraviolet radiation. Do the same to mech suits and airlocks, plus give the mech suits a good chemical scrubbing before they go outside. I know that this is a time-consuming pain in the ass, and the crew will hate.
Ha!
I laughed. That felt good. Part of the laugh was relief at having dodged another bullet.
The crew will understand. A lot of life in the military is a time-consuming pain in the ass. We get used to it.
If you say so.
I do.
I'll talk with Chang, Sims, and Smythe about it.
Is that it, or are you going to smack me with more bad news?
Not today.
Great.
That I know of.
Uh-huh. Can't make any promises, you know.
You are an unending source of comfort to me, Skippy.
The Maxalts had a good plan. Our plan was better. Also, we didn't need to destroy their two heavy cruisers. In fact, we didn't want to blow up both of them. Okay, if we got a lucky shot and one of those warships became a brief flare of plasma, I would not lose any sleep over it. We just weren't taking any additional risks to make that happen. My greatest concern about the action at Planet Voodoo was not getting into a fight against a pair of heavy cruisers. That was a known risk, and we could manage it. My concern was what we did not know. Was it a trap? Was Skippy's intel wrong? Were the Maxalts sending more than two heavy cruisers, and were they planning another trap for us? I didn't think so. The Kiddies had not initiated the action at Planet Voodoo, or whatever its real name is. They are just responding to an operation the Bosphorak had set in motion before our near-disaster 13th attack. If it was a trap intended for us, then the Birdbrains must be part of the trap, and I didn't see that happening. Okay, so we only had to worry that there might be more than two heavy cruisers involved. We could scan the area ahead of time, and if anything did not match Skippy's intel, we would get the hell out of there. Really, the plan would work for us either way. If everything went as planned, we would give the Kiddies another bloody nose and destroy their faith in their most secure communications technology. If we discovered the Kiddies had set another trap for us, we could taunt them with an infuriating "nice try" message and jump away. That would let the Kiddies know the ghost ship was still active, was not stupid enough to fall for a trap, and was a continuing threat. Then we could look for another opportunity to plant a set of Pixies aboard a Bosphorak ship. This time, I actually had a good feeling about the operation, rather than the sleepless, stomach-churning fear and doubt I usually experienced before battles. Which probably meant the universe was about to stab me in the back. My life sucks. I gave the go order anyway. The Kiddies were supremely arrogant. They had developed and refined a set of tactics for dealing with the Rindaloo and clients of the Spiders, plus the restless clients of the Maxalks themselves. Those tactics had been tested and proved successful over thousands of years of real and simulated combat, and the Maxalts rightfully trusted the advice of the sophisticated AIs that directed battle simulations. The Maxalts were arrogant. Unfortunately for us, they weren't stupid. Much as it pained them to admit they had not accounted for every possible conflict, and after being slow to acknowledge the reality that they were getting their supremely confident furry asses kicked by a single ghost ship while the entire galaxy watched gleefully and cheered, they did adjust their tactics. The problem for them was that their AIs had not yet completed analysis of our capabilities and intentions, so they had to guess. Even uninformed guesses could cause a lot of trouble for us, if we weren't prepared. One of the heavy cruisers remained just over a light hour away from the rendezvous point, while the other ship jumped in to conduct reconnaissance. Both ships had primary and backup shield generators set on full power. Missiles were hot in their launch tubes, ready to launch at a moment's notice. Not knowing what threat they might encounter, the launch tubes had a full suite of ship killers, decoys, enhanced radiation, and other weapons loaded. Packed in with the ship killers were missiles with warheads designed to generate intense plasma flares that could temporarily blind an enemy's sensors. In addition to missiles, both ships had a variety of directed energy weapons fully charged. Railgun magnets were on standby, and the hellish energies of more exotic weapons were barely held in check. The ships were ready to defend themselves against any enemy they might encounter. Except us. The ship that had drawn the honor of conducting the recon mission immediately launched three missiles after it jumped precisely into the scheduled rendezvous point. Such precision, coming within 900 meters of the designated coordinates, was not necessary, as it would make no difference in the outcome of the coming battle. The ship's crew was proud of their precision, for they knew the other ship would be watching and either criticizing or grudgingly praising the precision emergence through a rip in space-time. The three missiles were not directed at targets. They were decoys. Each missile wrapped itself in a stealth field and projected only extremely faint emissions that duplicated the signature of their parent ship. One missile flew onward along the course of the ship, while the ship veered sharply away.
Without very sophisticated sensors, no lurking enemy would be able to detect which object was the ship and which were decoys before the stealth fields became so effective that it was impossible to see anything at all. The ship remained on high alert as it cruised in a pre-selected search pattern around the rendezvous coordinates, dropping off stealth probes to create a bubble around the center. The grid of probes extended beyond the edge of the area where the Maxalks disdainfully estimated the crude navigation systems of the Bosphorak would dump their ships, in case the precision of their rebellious clients was even worse than expected. With the area covered by probes, the warship tested the network established by the linked probes and waited for the verification that the probes were feeding their data along an ultra-thin beam in a single direction. Satisfied the sensor coverage was secure, and knowing that lingering in the area only tempted fate, the ship jumped in the direction of the sensor signal. Left behind, the probes mindlessly gathered data about that empty area of interstellar space, sending the data onward by the undetectable beam. Silently encased in their own inky black stealth fields, the probes waited for the signal to activate their damping fields to prevent an enemy from escaping the wrath of their masters. The probes noted the ratio of hydrogen isotopes to other atoms in the near-perfect vacuum, along with random dust particles, X-rays, and less harsh radiation, and other things that were really of no interest to anyone. What the probes did not detect, because they had not been programmed to look for, because they did not know such objects existed, was micro-wormholes. If the probes had been able to see those nanoscale flaws in the underlying fabric of space-time, they would have been concerned, because the target coordinates were saturated by micro-wormholes. Chapter 23
Bingo!
Skippy's exultant cry made me almost jump out of the command chair where I had just parked my butt for what I thought would be a long wait. Sims and I were pulling duty on the bridge. We each got 6 hours on, 6 off. That left only 5 or less hours for sleep and was guaranteed to make me cranky. With such a small crew, we didn't have much choice. Everyone was standing 6-hour watches. Our chief pilot, Reed, was getting rack time on a cot she set up across the passageway from the main door to the bridge, and Sims was crashing on my couch. Sleeping in my cabin saved her about 20 seconds of running in a crisis. Those 20 seconds could make a huge difference in a combat situation. Her sleeping in my cabin also meant I was finding long hairs in my sink and tangled in my toothbrush. Also, when I walked into my cabin, the place had a faint scent of jasmine or whatever she used for shampoo or lotion. Neither of those things bothered me. In fact, I was thinking about switching to another cabin and designating mine as quarters for the on-call crew. But it would have been nice if the long hairs in my sink came from a woman who was sleeping with me in the cabin and not on the couch, if you know what I mean. Anyway, that's not what Skippy was shouting about. What is it? The holographic display at the front of the bridge was still new to me. Sometimes I missed the old-fashioned flat screens of the Flying Dutchman's bridge.
A single Maxalk's Vindicator-class heavy cruiser jumped into the rendezvous zone, he explained.
A glance at the simple clock confirmed my inner judgment.
Oh, crap, that's early.
It was early. Less than 12 minutes after Skippy's earliest estimate of when the Maxalks might arrive.
Do we have any indication this is a problem?
No, Joe. Skippy calmed my fears.
It could be totally random, or the kitties are being super extra cautious because of the big bad ghost ship that is terrorizing the space lanes.
He chuckled with satisfaction.
Should I alert the ready crew?
No, let Sims get sleep. The Bosphorak aren't arriving early, are they?
Not that I know of. Based on what we know of their flight plans, the star carrier with the battleships can't get here any earlier, and the other two star carriers would be foolish to arrive at the rendezvous before the big guns are here. The Bosphorak know the Maxalks could be intercepting their message traffic.
Right. We wait then. No change of plans, I decided, ignoring my own fears.
Hey, what was that type of ship again?
It's a Vindicator-class heavy cruiser, the same type I expected. We have trained against that type of ship. We know its strengths and weaknesses.
Why?
That's an odd name, I observed, trying to remember what Vindicator meant. My useless brain was drawn a blank.
No more odd than any other name. The Maxalks believe their continued success justifies or vindicates their position as rightful rulers of the galaxy.
Rulers, I snorted.
Yeah, they might want to tell the Rindaloo about that.
I said rightful, Joe, not actual. The Kitties strongly believe that only the ongoing oppression of the spiders prevents them from bringing peaceful order to the galaxy.
Peaceful?
A peaceful order under their oppressive rule, Joe.
Yeah, I vote no on that.
Okay, we wait.
The enemy crews have flew around dropping off probes, or that is what Skippy guessed it was doing. Even he had a tough time tracking it through the advanced stealth field. Then it jumped away, and we later detected a burst of gamma radiation coming from a spot 3 light minutes away. Technically, we did not detect the actual gamma ray burst, for Maxalt ships could detect 96% of the gamma radiation into a narrowly focused beam. That gave them a major advantage in combat. Most other ships could not avoid lighting up the sky like a strobe light when they emerged from jump. The Maxalts could tweak their jump wormholes so they dumped the residual radiation in any direction they wanted, usually away from their enemy's sensors. We had the same technology aboard Valkyrie, except the awesomeness of Skippy had increased the efficiency to 99.2%. Or so he said. We had not actually tested that efficiency in action. What Skippy detected was not the thin gamma burst itself. He picked up its backscatter off stray hydrogen atoms. 11 hydrogen atoms, to be specific. That was 3 more, he had smugly announced, than he needed to determine the enemy's location. With the 2 Maxalt's heavy cruisers having set their trap, we waited. By the time we reached the window when the Bosphorok battleships were scheduled to arrive, I was getting used to 6 hours on, 6 off. My duty shift had begun 4 hours ago, and I hadn't been able to sleep during my off time, so I was existing on caffeine and adrenaline. Sims had finished her shift in the command chair, then walked over to man the weapons station. No way was she going to sleep anyway, and I needed my best people on the bridge. With that thought, my eyes automatically darted over to the sensor station, where Margaret Adams filled in when she was not training with the Star Team. She was not yet cleared to return to duty. That had to be killing her, I knew, knowing the ship and everyone around her were doing something while she waited for her brain to get back up to speed. Somewhere, probably in her cabin, she was watching a data feed from the bridge and willing her body to heal faster. Enough of that. In combat, I could not afford distractions. The clock stopped counting down to the target time and began counting up. 10 minutes, then 20. Then an hour, with nothing happening. It got to the point where I had serious regrets about drinking too much coffee when Skippy sang out again.
Just picked up a gamma ray burst. Signature is that of a Bosphorok battleship.
Battleship? My puzzlement was matched by several of the bridge crew. A single battleship? Not a star carrier?
Single battleship. It is 27 light minutes away from our position.
Something's wrong. Slowly, I raised my fist and pounded it on the armrest.
Nothing is wrong, Joe. I anticipated this might happen. Think about it.
Think about? Looking at the holographic display, I saw the rendezvous point in the middle, the estimated location of the 2 Maxalt ships 3 light minutes away, and now the lone battleship.
Why?
Duh. Of course. The battleship is not alone, I answered, feeling proud of myself. The others are out there, probably forming a ring around the rendezvous point. We haven't seen the other ships yet because the gamma rays from their inbound jumps haven't reached us yet.
Very good, Joe.
Yeah, I know. I'm a clever monkey. I should get myself a juice box. Skippy, that's no good. I shouldn't have to think about it. The speed of light lag is something that should automatically be part of how I view space combat.
We all should, I added when I saw Reed nodding her head at the pilot station.
You're getting there, Joe. Skippy gave me rare encouragement, making me wonder what insult he would slam me with next. But he didn't.
Oh. Thanks. You keep giving hints to us filthy monkeys, please. And I see another battleship just popped up on the display.
After a couple minutes, all 4 of the expected battleships appeared, plus their star carrier. The 5 ships must have been exchanging messages via tight beam transmissions we couldn't detect from that distance, because the star carrier jumped away far enough that we didn't detect its inbound gamma ray burst until much later.
All right, the star carrier has cleared the battle space, I announced to the bridge crew who already had that information.
Skippy, is there any sign the battleships won't do what we expect next?
No. They have been using active scanners, but their sensors have not detected us, the Maxalt ships, their probes, or my micro-wormholes. From backscatter, I picked up a fragment of a message that might have been their signal for all clear. It is too faint to tell for sure. We keep waiting, then.
Waiting sucked. And then there was nothing we could do about it. What we expected to happen next was for the two transport star carriers to jump in far away, within a few light minutes of the star carrier that had been hauling the battleships. If they received an all-clear message from a battleship, the two star carriers would proceed to the rendezvous point, and the battleships would join them for the relatively short flight to planet Voodoo. When the two star carriers and the four battleships were conveniently gathered in a small area at the rendezvous point, we expected all hell to break loose. Those battleships had a choice of tactics, none of them good. Normally, while preparing for action against a pier like the Jurapha, two or three of the big capital ships would have remained a light minute or so away from the rendezvous point where they would not be such easy targets. In this action, when they anticipated that any fight would be against their patrons, the Maxalts, the battleships needed to be together so they could mass their firepower on the enemy. Four Bosphorok battleships against one Maxalt's heavy cruiser would be a decent fight, at least for a while. Long enough for the star carriers and the transport ships they were loaded with to get away. What we knew, and the bird brains did not, was that their opposition was a pair of heavy cruisers. The battle would be a slaughter. Actually, we knew a lot of other info that wasn't available to the Bosphorok. We knew the kiddies had laid a trap and were waiting to spring it. The birds knew it was possible they would encounter trouble, but they had tagged it as a low probability. After all, Planet Voodoo was an unimportant place and not located within an easy wormhole path to their patron's territory. We knew the number and types of ships the kiddies had, while the birds certainly did not anticipate matching up against capital ships. Based on their history of joint fleet exercises with the Maxalts, the bird brains rightly expected they might encounter a pair of light cruisers, perhaps a squadron of destroyers. That is what the kiddies normally would have assigned to strike a lightly defended target, and the Bosphorok understood standard Maxalt's tactics. What they didn't know is that our ghost ship had screwed everything up for them. Our hit-and-run attacks had forced the Maxalt's to change tactics, to assign heavier combatants or larger numbers of ships. So there were two heavy cruisers waiting to trap and pound those battleships and defenseless star carriers. We also had a rough idea of how the Maxalts planned to conduct the attack. That gave us an advantage because it limited the area we needed to cover. All we had to do was wait. Wait and worry that there might be something important I had forgotten about. The next event did not require an announcement by Skippy because I was watching the display when it happened. Our sensors picked up the gamma-ray burst of a star carrier jumping in near one of the battleships, and based on the signature, we knew it was one of the star carriers hauling empty passenger transport ships. Skippy, I didn't take my eyes away from the holographic display. Call the ready crew to duty stations. It's showtime. Sims had not even sat down at one of the weapon stations when a battleship emerged at the rendezvous point. Once all the players were there, the Bosphorok were wisely not wasting time. They would assemble all six ships in a protective formation with the two vulnerable star carriers at the center and proceed to Planet Voodoo. That was the plan. The Maxalts had a different plan. The first sign of trouble for the battleships was when they detected a damping field forming around them. That was an indication of an oh-shit level of danger, but not yet a total disaster. The crews of all ships knew they had a window of opportunity to escape before the damping field was firmly established, and all ships maintained sufficient charge for an energy jump. The rule of jumping away immediately upon detection of a damping field was true when the opposing force was a peer species. It was not true when the enemy was the supremely capable Maxalts, and especially not true when the entire area had been saturated with probes that sent out powerful damping waves. Seeing the strength of the damping field around them go from faint ripples to gale-force waves in a heartbeat, the crews still did not entirely panic. They correctly assessed the waves must be generated by relatively small satellites that could not maintain such a power output for long. They were correct,
and the ships turned and burned to disperse out toward the edge of the field while the weapons of the battleships targeted the now visible probes. It didn't do them any good. Two of the probes had been knocked out by railgun fire from battleships, and the damping field strength was already ebbing when two large senior species warships jumped in to join the party. That was when the bird brain's level of danger spiked from oh shit to we're doomed. Watching the action on the bridge display, I reluctantly had to admire the professionalism and pure guts of the battleship's crews. They knew they were very likely dead, yet they did not flinch from their duty to protect the star carriers. Or they knew they were very likely dead and figured they might as well try to take some of their MFing patrons with them. If we had jumped our ghost ship in right then, we might have saved those battleships by luring the Maxalts away. We could have simply stayed where we were and dropped our sophisticated stealth field. Sadly for the crews of the battleships, saving them was not on my to-do list that day. We were impressed when the battleships fired on their patrons immediately without wasting any time with useless talk. Both sides knew why they were there, and it was not to negotiate. The Maxalts did order their clients to surrender, knowing they were wasting their breath and following formalities anyway. The sincerity of the surrender and you won't be harmed message was rendered less heartwarming when the transmissions were received at the same time maser beams fired by the heavy cruisers seared into the shields of the battleships. Maybe the kiddies should have sent a fruit basket. We were very much impressed when all four battleships, having sustained significant damage in the opening minutes of the fight, turned toward their enemy so their bulk shielded the star carriers as those ships tried to run away. As the star carriers ran under full acceleration, they ejected the 18 transport ships they had been carrying, and those ships scattered in any direction that was not toward the enemy. So far, the kiddies had ignored the vulnerable civilian ships, knowing the damping field was now reinforced throughout the area and the transports were not going far. Destroy or disable the battleships, the tactic was, and then the transports could be hunted down later. If we were impressed by the bravery and professionalism of the boss Varrock, the Maxalts had to be more than a little annoyed by their clients. Despite the constant punishment coming from the heavy cruisers, all four battleships concentrated their fire on a single enemy ship. That was sure suicide, and the only way to inflict worthwhile damage before the battleships were out of the fight. It was interesting to see the fight happen for real. Skippy had shown us simulations of a contest between four of the Boss Farrakh's most modern and capable battleships against two senior species heavy cruisers, and the actual fight was not much different from what we expected. Still, it was awe-inspiring to see it in real time. None of the warships involved had bothered to engage stealth or deploy decoys, because the gigawatts of energy they were pouring into space lit them up like a Christmas tree. Without stealth, and with all of the ships unable to jump away, it was a stand-up fight within a bubble less than 2 light seconds across. "One of the battleships is out of the fight," Sims warned. "Enemy is continuing to hit it." "Wait a second," I counseled, having run through the exact scenario and simulations. The Maxalts could be intending to pound that crippled battleship to dust, or it could simply be that maser beams, railgun darts, and missiles they fired before the battleship lost power were still in the fight. "Enemy fire is being redirected," Sims confirmed my thought. On the display, we could see missiles curving as they were redirected toward other targets. "Okay," I clapped my hands softly to avoid startling anyone who had fingers poised above buttons. "We have what we want, a disabled Boss Farrakh battleship. It's our turn. Sims, weapons free." "Aye, aye," she acknowledged, and despite her reminding me that she would rather have stayed on Avalon, there was a smile on her face as she unleashed hell. There is a saying I learned in infantry training: if you can see it, you can kill it. Or something like that. I've heard many versions of that old truism. That truth also applies to air combat and probably sea warfare. My experience training was as a ground pounder. Basically, identifying the location of a target means that you can deliver ordnance on it, either by yourself, with a rifle, grenade, or heavy weapons, like a mortar or javelin missile. A fire team can do a lot of damage. For targets beyond the effective range of weapons available to a platoon, you can use the most deadly device ever developed: a radio.
One of my instructors told me that four soldiers with rifles are a fire team, but one soldier with a radio is an army. With a radio, you can call in battalion artillery or close air support and rain hellfire down on a target. Anyway, the point is, pretty much anything you can see can be killed. When I got to Paradise, and in training on Camp Alpha before that, nothing I saw changed the idea of being able to kill any target I could locate. With the ability to call in fire support from orbit, where every square meter of a planet's surface can be covered by a single warship within 40 minutes, that idea I learned way back in basic training was reinforced. Then, when I had to learn the very different rules of ship-to-ship space combat, I painfully realized that idea was dangerous bullshit that I needed to forget. Not only forget, I needed to wipe that kind of thinking from my subconscious. The problem with space combat is the vast distances involved and the speed of the combatants. Plus, the speed of light is agonizingly slow. In space, seeing a target only means that photons generated by or reflected from a target have reached your eyeballs. Or actually, the photons were detected by your ship's sensors. What you are seeing is where that target was at the time the photons left there. A ship that is estimated to be a mere 3 light seconds away, only 500,000 kilometers, could move out of the way before your maser beam arrives. Probably did move, for ships were constantly engaged in evasive maneuvers during combat or even potential combat. We call that intentionally random movements side to side and up and down jinking. Not that up or down have any meaning in space, you know what I mean. By the way, we don't call for evasive pattern Riker Delta or any nonsense like that. Sorry, Star Trek, but the whole point of being evasive is to avoid having a pattern. Because while your ship's navigation AI is jinking you around, the enemy's AI is intensely analyzing your movements and attempting to discern a pattern. If the enemy is able to predict your next move, then you can be sure your next supposedly random jink will fly you right into the path of a maser beam that arrives just as your ships get there. As Scooby-Doo would say,
"Ruh-roh."
Wait, you ask, what about guided weapons like missiles? They can adjust course to track the enemy ship's movements regardless of maneuvers. Yes, that is a very smart observation. Get yourself a juice box. The problem with missiles is that even compared to the sloth-like speed of light, missiles are slow. Even with the advanced launch rails we had aboard Valkyrie, our missiles slammed out of their tubes at a relatively casual pace. Those launch rails sounded great, but we could only use them when the launch tube was pointed in the direction of the target. Otherwise, our missiles would expend most of their fuel to get lined up on the target. So let's say your target is a mere 2 light seconds away. That is about 600,000 kilometers. By the time your missile flies across that distance, the enemy could have jumped away. The enemy could, in fact, have jumped in behind you and be frying your sorry ass with maser beams while your valiant missile is asking itself, "Where the F did my target go?" And then the missile would pout and fall into a deep depression, for it knew it had missed its target and was doomed to drift in deep space until the end of time. Hey, it could be worse, you could tell that missile. It could be doomed to watch every episode of the truly awful TV show Casablanca on an endless loop. Skippy had made me watch that crap fest, and with every second I could feel my will to live seeping away. Anyway, my point is space combat is really, really complicated. To make it worse, the enemy ship is undoubtedly wrapped in a stealth field while your missile's overeager propulsion system is lighting up the sky like fireworks. That makes the enemy ship a difficult target to track, and your missile easy to intercept. The real problem in space combat is not that our weapons travel slowly, it is that sensor data flows slowly back to our ship. By the time we think we have located a stealthy enemy ship, it will have moved, and we have to find it all over again. Anyway, why does all of this matter? Because the Merry Band of Pirates found a loophole in the law that sensor data has to flow slowly. Really, we didn't find that loophole. The incomparable magnificence of Skippy created the loophole. His use of micro-wormholes to saturate the battle space gave us a huge advantage. An enemy ship that was 20 light seconds away was too far away for us to effectively track. But if that same ship was only 100,000 kilometers from a micro-wormhole, our sensors were working with data that had less than a 1 second lag. But wait, you say.
Our maser beam, which can't change direction in mid-flight, will still be in the wrong place when it arrives, because it will still take 20 seconds to reach the target area.
Yes, of course you say that. You were the same jerk who stands up in the audience wearing the Star Trek uniform your mom made for you, asking why in episode 14 of season 3, the blah blah blah.
Shut up! It was just a TV show. Get over it.
Also, we don't plan to use a maser beam, Mr. Smartass. Having a micro wormhole providing passive sensor data gives us yet another huge advantage. In the guidance system of that missile is a micro wormhole that was tied back to its companion aboard Valkyrie. Our missile could rocket out of its launch tube at high velocity, having the luxury of waiting until we got the launcher swiveled around to point at that target. The missile then coasted on unpowered, conserving its fuel and emitting almost no detectable signature. Every time the enemy ship moved, the missile adjusted its flight with less than a 1 second lag, while the target heavy cruiser had no idea danger was approaching.
Did I say missile? Oops, sorry. I meant missiles. Like, more than one. 7, to be specific.
When your dropship is enveloped in a damping field, that causes the fabric of space-time to vibrate in a way that prevents jump wormholes from forming. You can't jump away. If your ship is outside a damping field, it is possible to jump into one. You have to tune your jump drive to emerge into an area of chaotic space-time, and your crew should be aware of the situation, because it is going to be a rough ride. Also, understand that you will blow jump coils, and you won't be jumping away anytime soon, even if the field dissipates. Those are the rules that apply to ordinary ships. Valkyrie was not an ordinary ship. Skippy had taken the best technology the Maxalks had and improved on it. It helped that the Maxalks tuned their damping fields to avoid interfering with their type of jump drive, a capability the Boss Farrakh couldn't match. Plus, we had the pure awesomeness that was Skippy the Magnificent. Still, jumping into the swirling battle was not easy. A 1 second lag in sensor data sounded like it was not a problem, but we might emerge right in front of a particle beam that hadn't been fired before we activated our jump drive. That was a risk we had to take. We also had to risk not knowing exactly how local space-time's fabric was disrupted by overlapping and interfering damping fields projected by 6 warships. What the hell, right? You only live once. Who dares wins. Go big or go home. Pick whatever bullshit bravado cliche you prefer. It all meant somebody needed to make a judgment call without having enough information. That somebody was me.
Joe, Skippy prompted me. Our missiles are approaching detection range.
Maxalt's missiles had stealth fields that were generated using ship's power before they launched. The missile's power unit then only needed to maintain the field during its typically short flight. With our 7 missiles coasting unpowered, their flight time was longer than usual, and the power unit was draining rapidly. As the missiles flew closer to the battle zone, they were running through clouds of ionized dust and debris, leaving faint trails behind that the stealth fields couldn't do anything about. In seconds, the heavy cruiser we had targeted would be alerted to the unexpected danger.
Right on time, I muttered with a glance at the time code on the display.
Sims, signal those missiles into attack mode.
Reed, jump us in.
Chapter 24. The Maxalt's heavy cruiser Vardanox was having a good day. The battle was going mostly according to plan, with the exception that all 4 of the client battleships had directed their fire at their patron's warship. That was a good thing, in the opinion of the Vardanox's crew. Otherwise, the combat would be a rather dull affair. With their ship absorbing hits from 4 of the Boss Farrakh's most powerful warships, the crew would have a good story to tell when they got back to base. It was also amusing to see their pathetic clients fighting back in so futile a fashion. Or so the crew would say to each other. Privately, some of them, the smarter ones, were beginning to have concerns. Not doubts, merely concern. The 4 battleships were firing everything they had at the Vardanox, and their determined suicide tactics were an aspect the Maxalks had not anticipated. Clients were supposed to be meek and intimidated when confronted by the supreme power and majesty of their patrons. Instead, the heavy cruiser was taking hits hard enough that the AI was recommending they attempt to disengage. Turn and run while firing back, the AI suggested.
Get to a distance where the enemy's energy weapons were ineffective, perhaps a distance where the Bosphorok damping field was weak and the cruiser could jump away. It was merely a precaution, the AI stated. Certainly the haughty Maxulks had nothing to fear. It would be a disaster if the Vardanoks returned to base with substantial damage from what was supposed to be an easy fight. It would be a much bigger disaster if the cruiser had been seen to run away from their clients. Knowing that, the cruiser's captain ordered her ship to close with the enemy. One of the battleships was out of the fight. Surely the fight would be over soon, and any damage could be repaired in flight. No sooner had the Vardanoks committed to seeing the fight through to the end than an alarm sounded. Missiles had just kicked into full acceleration, coming straight at the cruiser from behind. From the drive signatures and the decoys scattered by the missiles, they were clearly Maxulks in origin. That could only mean one thing. The Vardanoks was just about to signal its companion ship to warn of the danger when the ghost ship emerged in a chaotic burst of gamma rays. It would have been dramatic for me to grip the arms of my chair, or even better, slam a fist down as I shouted an order. In a deep voice, I would bark commands like, "Weapons free," or "Fire for effect," or "Target the enemy and fire." I did not do any of those dumbass things because I didn't need to. We didn't have time for the crew to wait for my slow brain to make decisions. We didn't even have time for the crew at their stations to send orders to their banks of weapons. Our attack plan had been programmed into the consoles before we jumped. Everything was on automatic after that. As soon as Valkyrie emerged from the inbound end of our jump wormhole, we had missiles being slammed along the rails of their launch tubes, which had been swiveled around to point in the proper direction before we jumped. Maser beam exciters created beams of coherent energy, stabbing out toward the enemy, with particle beams and railguns right behind. Our most potent weapon, the anti-energy pulse cannon, cycled through shot after shot as quickly as the exotic particles that powered it could be created. Space between us and the Vardanoks was so filled with hard-accelerating missiles, directed energy, and debris that our sensors were having to guess exactly what was out there. The sensor system's level of confidence was shown by a sliding bar on the side of the display. It went from a boastful, "I got this," at the top, to "I have no freaking clue" at the bottom. Once the heavy cruiser recovered from its initial shock and began frantically shooting back at us, the bar slid down to the level I thought of as, "Dude, I'm making up half this shit." That did not fill me with confidence. Neither did the way the deck was rocking. "Sims?" I asked, adding to her burden without any possibility that I would get a useful answer. Somebody needed to tell that idiot in the command chair to shut up and let his people do their jobs. Sims shot me an exasperated look, and Skippy answered for her. "Joe, will you please shut your pie hole unless you have something useful to say? We are fine. Don't worry." The flashing alert on the display, showing that our point defense system had lost track of 3 inbound missiles, was enough justification for my worry. The deck then rocked violently, at the same time the display's indicator clicked down to only 2 missiles unaccounted for. Because the 3rd missile had snuck in unseen and impacted our shields, hard enough that plasma fragments splattered on our hull plating. That thick armor plating mostly held, but in a few spots, the plasma burned down to the reactive armor layer, which exploded outward to prevent the plasma from penetrating into the ship's vital insides. That was a serious concern. Valkyrie only had a limited number of replacement reactive armor panels, and no way to get or make more. Engaging in combat with a Maxulk's heavy cruiser, even one that had taken hits and was tangling with 3 client battleships, was not a sure thing. There was risk involved, and that risk became exponentially greater when our somewhat wonky inbound jump dumped us within point-blank range of our target. We had planned to emerge half a light second away, about 150,000 kilometers. Because even Skippy had not been able to map all the overlapping damping fields and analyze how they affected the fabric of local spacetime, we emerged less than 7,000 kilometers away from the Vardanoks. In space combat, that is way too close for comfort. That is so close that when our missiles launched, they slammed out of their tubes at full acceleration, relying on guidance provided by the ship's sensors. Once they cleared the tube and began using their own sensors,
They only had a short time to go from where the hell is the freaking target to WTF as they crashed into the enemy's shields. We had several advantages after we jumped into the battle space, even though our jump caused all of our micro wormholes to blink out of existence as Skippy lost his connection to them. We had a larger, more powerful, more heavily protected ship. We had total surprise. The enemy had three other ships shooting at them, while we could concentrate only on the Vardanox. But our biggest advantage was that we did not need to finish the fight. We could disengage at any time. Our objective was to have three things to happen. For a Bosphorok battleship to become disabled, for the Maxulks to realize our fearsome ghost ship was there, and for the Maxulk ships to run away from the threat we posed. Objective one was achieved before we jumped, and we achieved the second objective merely by showing up to the fight and lobbing a couple maser bolts in their direction. We were working on the third objective. In case the fight went against us, the backup plan was for us to run away with the Maxulks in pursuit. Either way, we needed both groups of aliens to clear the battle space, or our whole operation was for nothing.
"Yes!" Skippy shouted, startling everyone. "Hold fire! Hold fire!"
he exhorted, and didn't wait for us. He cut power to the weapons as he spoke. Leaning forward in my chair, I came to the limit of what the nanofabric restraints would allow.
"What is it?"
"Lucky shot," he snickered.
"We knocked out a power distribution node in the cruiser's aft section on the port side. There is a temporary gap in their shields." "Why the hell are we holding fire?" I demanded.
"Because, Joe," he explained in the tone adults use when talking to small children, "you told me that destroying those cruisers was not necessarily an objective."
Oh. He was right about that. The display was showing a schematic image of the enemy cruiser, with some of the ship's features fuzzy, as our sensors were having to guess through all the energy and debris flying around. One section of the schematic was outlined in blinking red.
"Skippy." One side of my mouth clamped down on my lip harder than I intended, and I tasted blood. "If that damned ship's jump drive were to suffer a fatal cascade, I would not be unhappy, if you know what I mean."
"Ho-ho-ho-ho!" he chortled with an evil huskiness. "I think I know what yous mean, boss.
Colonel Sims, if you would." She didn't look up.
"On the way."
She had selected a railgun dart equipped with an atomic compression warhead instead of a simple kinetic round. That was overkill for the task, but Skippy is fond of reminding me that overkill is underrated. That ship went up like it was the 4th of July and somebody triggered all the fireworks at the same time. That would be fun to watch, but not from only 7,000 clicks away. Man, if I thought Valkyrie had been rocking before, that was nothing compared to what we experienced as we were caught in a fireball like a small sun. On the display, our shields were flickering, and there were so many red warning lights it was easier to look for systems that were not overloading.
Shit. Sometimes overkill is just overkill.
The second heavy cruiser, which had drawn the disappointing assignment of jumping in farther from the star carriers and had not been fired upon by the enemy at all, was glumly shooting away at the battleships when two things happened simultaneously. It received a missile warning from its companion ship at the moment when the ghost ship emerged from nowhere. Before, the crew of the heavy cruiser Ruprexa had been hoping for some excitement. Something like one of the battleships breaking off the attack on the Vardanox to charge at the Ruprexa. That would be exciting, and a story to tell when they got back to base. Encountering the ghost ship was more excitement than the Ruprexa's crew wanted, and if they had been free to admit that, they might have turned and run for the edge of the damping field. The Maxulks were powerful, they were arrogant, and like all bullies, they were cowards. No one had challenged them in so long, they felt a stab of fear at the unknown when someone pushed back. That was why the Ruprexa's crew had not rushed in to engage the four battleships. They preferred to let the Vardanox take the full force of the enemy's fury, while they remained a safe distance away. The arrival of the ghost ship changed the situation. The Ruprexa had no choice. Command wanted that mystery ship dead, and glory would go to the crew of any ship that ended that scourge. Unending shame and scorn would follow the crew who failed to aggressively engage in a fight with the ghost ship. Ignoring the three battleships that were now firing on the Vardanox with renewed vigor, the other heavy cruiser raced ahead,
taking time only to launch a trio of missiles at the disabled battleship along the way. Then, to the secret relief of the Ruprexus crew, the ghost ship was consumed by the fireball that was left of the Vardanox.
We're alive? That may have been the stupidest thing I ever said. Really, I should make a list and have people vote on it, because I have said a lot of really stupid stuff.
Yes, Skippy snapped. Have a little faith, will you? We got scorched a bit, that's all.
Then why is the display blank?
It was not exactly blank. Most of it was showing static, alternating with guesses about the position of enemy ships we couldn't see.
Because, dum-dum, the sensors are resetting. While they catch up, I am feeding my own data.
Whew, that was a close one. Maybe we shouldn't have...
The deck rocked, hard enough that the restraints tugged me back in the chair.
What was that?
Railgun dart, Skippy mumbled.
Where did that come from?
Must have been fired by that other cruiser. Before you ask, I don't think they can see us yet. Based on when it must have been launched, that dart was fired before we blew up the first ship. Sensors are clearing now. There are still a lot of high-energy particles flying around out there. Joe, we're in good shape, but that other cruiser will see us before we can get a target lock on it. It would be a good idea if we put some distance between us and the enemy.
Well, crap. No, we can't do that. We have a reputation as a fearsome ghost ship. We can't run away from a single cruiser.
Then we should do something else before they hit us with everything they have. Missile defense sensors are still blinded. We could take a lot of hits, Joe.
We are going to do something, I decided in a flash of inspiration.
Reed, turn us toward that other cruiser's last reported position and step on it.
Toward them? Skippy screeched. We're getting closer? This is your plan?
Trust me on this one. The crew of the heavy cruiser Ruprexa, having to that point sustained no damage in the raging battle, was overjoyed when they saw the ghost ship being consumed by the fireball that had been their sister ship. Their AI confirmed the crew's immediate expectation that no ship so close to that explosion could escape without serious damage. The ship's AI initially calculated a 31% chance that the ghost ship had been torn apart, though it cautioned too little was known of the mysterious ship's capabilities. Hearing that the ghost ship might no longer exist did not please the Ruprexa's crew. If that were true, the glory would go to the deceased losers of the Vardanox who had given their lives to save the Maxulk's hegemony from the scourge of the ghost ship, especially since the Vardanox's crew had not given their lives at all. Their own inept fumbling had killed them. Those jerks. When the blast was not followed by an enormous secondary explosion, the AI declared hopefully that the ghost ship was very likely drifting, stricken, and without power. That was the best outcome for the crew of the Ruprexa. They could have the honor of finishing off the scourge of the space lanes, and everyone would forget about the dead losers of their sister ship. The AI announced it had a 92% confidence in its assessment, and the captain ordered weapons held ready to adapt to the situation once the targeting sensors located what remained of the ghost ship. Until the targeting sensors began screaming a warning as the ghost ship charged out of the plasma cloud, flying straight at the Ruprexa. On the display, the shocked crew saw the enemy's hull glowing as that ship's shields shed plasma and exotic radiation. The Ruprexa's AI scrambled to evaluate the unexpected situation, immediately concluding the ghost ship must be far more powerful than any mere extinction-class battlecruiser. The ship's captain froze for a moment to her own shame. The crew looked to their captain for guidance and for hope. The ghost ship had taken everything a heavy cruiser could throw at it, including the Vardanox itself, and was still capable of combat. The moment of hesitation was broken when a message was received from the ghost ship. "Do you wish to engage?" the message read simply. The captain, crew, and AI of the Ruprexa very much did not wish to engage the enemy at that moment, or ever. Exploiting a temporary weakness in the damping fields saturating the battle space, the surviving heavy cruiser made a clumsy and noisy jump away. Then another jump, as soon as the ship's strained jump drive could manage. "Huh," Skippy said quietly. "That," I said while tensing my shoulders so the bridge crew did not see me shudder with relief,
"is called bluffing, Skippy."
"You took one hell of a risk, Joe.
Fighting a heavy cruiser right now would be an iffy proposition for us. Our point defense sensors are almost blind, and the shield generators, as you are fond of telling me, bluffing really didn't have much of a downside. If we had run in the opposite direction, could we have jumped away before that ship was in weapons range? No. Well, probably not. Our jump drive got dorked up by the explosion. Right. That's what I figured. Plus, we are the fearsome ghost ship, scourge of the space lanes. Running away from a single ship was not an option. Okay, Sims?
Sir?
Drop our damping field. Skippy, signal those three battleships to jump away as soon as they can. Suggest they make the longest jump their drives can handle. We will assist the disabled ship if we can.
Aye, aye, Sims acknowledged, and we waited anxiously as one, then another battleship disappeared in a burst of gamma rays.
Skippy, I squeezed the armrests. What the hell is that third ship waiting for? On the display, I could see the strength of the rapidly dissipating damping field around that battleship was wavering between the green and yellow indicators.
Is its drive damaged?
That could be a big problem for us. We did not want witnesses hanging around. The next part of the operation was already distasteful. Adding another dead ship to our list of crimes was not part of the plan.
Their drive is not the problem, Joe, he said with a sound like grinding his teeth together. The problem is, they want to be heroes.
Ah, shit. They want to join us? Of course they do, Joe. This should not be a surprise.
It's not. It is a pain in the ass.
Tell them thank you, but the best way they can participate in our glorious struggle against oppression is to evac the people on Vua, whatever it's called. You know, use your best revolutionary fervor bullshit.
Okay, he chuckled. I'm basing my latest inspiring revolutionary rant on the collected speeches of Fidel Castro. That should do it.
My knowledge of history, like my knowledge of most things, was sketchy.
Because Castro was such a great speaker?
No, because he was such a pompous windbag he never knew when to shut the hell up. I expect that battleship to jump away just so they don't have to listen to me anymore. And yes, that ship just jumped. We're good.
We're not good, I corrected him. We are far from good, I added to myself, and Sims caught my eye.
She nodded. Neither of us liked the next part.
We're the opposite of good.
XO, do we have a favorable firing solution?
Just about optimal, sir, she reported sourly.
In most situations, having an optimal solution would make the officer at the weapons station happy. Not this time.
Launch one. I gave her a thumbs up for encouragement.
One away.
Clearing my throat, I waited until everyone was looking in my direction.
People, nobody likes what we have to do. We don't have a choice, at least not one that I know of. We've been causing havoc all across Max Salk space and striking fear into the heart of the enemy. We have destroyed more than 40 ships. We are all proud of our accomplishments, and we all know those attacks are only pinpricks to the Max Salks. This operation is our chance to be more than an annoying distraction. We can hurt them, strike a blow against not only their C-3 capabilities, but their belief in their own superiority. To do that, we need to take an action that none of us are happy about. Remember, these birds, these vultures, would nuke our homeworld to ash if they had the chance.
From the pilot station, Reed nodded once, emphatically. No one said anything.
Okay, I took a breath. Skippy, signaled that battleship we will render assistance, and that they need to be wary of stealth Maxalt's missiles flying around. That part was true, and that was why even ships that had won a battle had to be careful about loitering in the battle space. Enemy missiles that had missed their targets would be seeking another opportunity to strike a target.
Got it, Joe.
Skippy's glum tone told me he wasn't any happier than I was.
That battleship is already pinging away with active sensors. It won't do them much good, he sighed.
Their sensor suite got pretty much fried. Our missile doesn't need its enhanced stealth capability.
Yeah, well, stick to the plan.
The crew of the battleship was overjoyed when the ghost ship blew up one enemy cruiser, scared away another, and then approached to rescue the survivors. More than half of the Bosphorak ship's crew was dead already,
and the survivors knew their ship was no longer capable of combat. The best they could hope for was to be picked up by another warship to continue taking the fight to their hated patrons. Best of all, beyond the wildest hopes of anyone aboard, they would be taken aboard the fearsome ghost ship. Yes, they could strike a powerful blow against the enemy as new recruits to the mysterious scourge of the space lanes. The missile warning sounded only 2 seconds before impact, not enough time for the point defense system to even begin to calculate a firing solution for the few Mazer cannons that were active. "That's it," I announced without joy, and without necessity, for everyone on the bridge had seen the damaged Bosphorok battleship blow up. Sims launched the package. Packages away. Skippy broadcast a general message for ships to be wary of missiles in the battle space. Pilot, wait 10 seconds, then jump us away. The package launched shortly before we jumped was a modified sensor probe. It wasn't fast or powerful, and it didn't need either of those qualities. It was small and stealthy, and its payload had been replaced with a trio of bots. On its own, the package used passive sensors to scan the area, identified the best target, and it carefully approached a section of the battleship we had blown to pieces. Within 28 minutes of launching, it had matched course and speed with the tumbling and scorched section of what was once a proud battleship, a ship that had defied its cruel masters. Latching onto the wreck, the package released the bots, two of which scurried along the interior, ignoring shattered and frozen body fragments. Reaching a heavily armored magazine, they easily cracked the encryption on the door mechanism and planted our pixies. On the way out, they erased any evidence of having been there. The third bot made a beeline for a data access point and hacked into what remained of the local network. That bot planted highly encrypted evidence that the Bosphorok had broken the secret of how pixies operated. The evidence we planted was deliberately vague and corrupted and would only be believed by someone who had seen the actual pixies. The database could be misdirection. No way could the kiddies ignore finding actual pixies. We hoped. The heavy cruiser Ruprexa waited a carefully calculated amount of time before returning near the battle space. Ordinarily, the time would be calculated to avoid enemy missiles lurking in the area. That was not why the heavy cruiser hesitated. First, they waited at a distant point to detect the extremely faint gamma-ray signature of the ghost ship jumping away. Curiously, that was detected shortly after the disabled Bosphorok battleship exploded, an event that had no immediate explanation. If they survived, the Ruprexa's crew planned to claim one of their missiles had destroyed their client's traitorous battleship, and they were already altering the flight recorder data to match their version of events. After seeing the ghost ship jump away, the delay in returning was a two-factor calculation. First, how long should they wait to make sure the ghost ship was not waiting nearby to ambush them? Second, how long could they wait before their fleet command accused them of cowardice? The captain waited until they were perilously close to the cowardice deadline, then warily jumped in. The battle space was empty, other than cold, floating debris and echoing radiation. Ready to jump away at any moment, the Ruprexa launched probes to explore the wreckage, the crew irritated at needing to follow procedure and expecting to find nothing of interest. They were very much wrong about that.
"This is..."
Admiral Urkan paused, scraping a claw along the side of his desk. The desk was well worn from his habit of dragging a sharp nail along the tough and expensive wood. He could have chosen a standard desk made of composites or some exotic material for the desk. Instead, he had selected wood from trees that were native to the home planet of the Rindaloo. The trees no longer grew on that world. Only single-celled organisms survived there now. He liked the wood for several reasons. For visitors, the wood's distinctive patterns told them that he had the position and power to demand a rare item. For him, it was a prideful reminder that his species had